Hi everyone, welcome back. Today we have our episode after the first pre-season game, Leicester 3, Peterborough United 1. I was joined by Dell, Ashley and Lods today. I'm Harry. It was an interesting one. We talked about the first half in detail and the takeaways. We talked about the second half in detail and the takeaways. And a really quite engaged debate broke out over the away kit towards the end of the episode, which I found very entertaining to listen to. And hopefully you do too. Enjoy. All right, first pre-season game done against Championship Leicester City. Clearly a game of two halves, given that we changed 10 players at half-time. So let's break it down into two parts. And Ashley, talk to me about the first half. What were your thoughts?
Do you know what? The first half of the game was interesting because the if I start with like the front three, it felt a little bit more similar to last season that we had Otto, we had Hayes and we had Lindgren. And you definitely felt like they had played together and they knew what positions they were going to play with each other. I think that the interesting thing is probably in the midfield where we've seen this change from the 4-2-3-1. It looks like we're going to play a bit more of a 4-3-3. And that means that the three in the midfield are basically given the right to roam and just make triangles with themselves. Obviously, Joe Andrews, Ryan de Havilland and Donny O'Brien Brady, the three of them, it looked like they were happy to rotate. There were points in times where obviously they weren't quite getting it right. And the great thing about pre-season friendlies for me is that you can always hear the coaching staff and you can hear them giving the instruction, especially when you go to, and obviously, in the future, we're going to go to Stamford, we're going to go to PSL. You can stand right by them. You can really hear the instruction. And from an analytical point of view, it's great to hear what the coaches and the managers are saying. And you can then see where the players need to be on the pitch. So is that our strongest midfield? I don't think so. Obviously, Archie Collins started the second half. But those three players, I think that realistically, they've probably got quite an important position to play throughout the season. So it was nice to see them working each other out and getting to know each other inside the first 45 minutes.
Completely agree. That was the most interesting thing about the first half was those three in midfield and when it worked and didn't work and when Fergie thought it worked and didn't work, because we could hear the blow by blow on when he thought that O'Brien Brady was too deep or he thought that de Havilland hadn't done what he was meant to in a moment. I think two things I want to take away from it. He wants O'Brien Brady to move from a literal centre-back position to an almost attacking mid position, depending on the phase of the transition you're in. So when Bass received the ball back, he wants O'Brien Brady to be already ahead of their striker, as in facing Bass with no gap between them. And I worked out why. Anyone could have worked out why. Because the striker then goes with O'Brien Brady and Mendonca is then completely free to be passed to, which is exactly what happened. And Fergie was barking at Donny to get further back and closer. And the moment Mendonca got it, he was screaming at Dobby to move forward and to be there in the midfield. He had to shout at Andrews as well to stay further up when the defenders were passing to each other. It's clearly a middle three where they have to be brave. They have to be extremely brave in the transition and trust that other players can get it up to them. He wants the three of them to be pretty far advanced. It's only when we've got it all the way back on our own line, with Bass getting involved, does one of them drop in. Clearly, they did not execute it exactly how Fergie wanted, but this is what preseason is for. And it's a good thing, I think, that we as fans could not only just see what Fergie wanted, but hear it as well. There's clearly a game plan here. I hope that they can all kick on. For what it's worth, I thought that Donny was the best of the three. I thought de Havilland was absolutely nowhere near it. For a guy that needs to prove himself in a team that he has floated in and around for the last 2 years, goodness me, does he need to kick on, because he showed me nothing in that first half. I hate to be too critical, as you know, but I'm already on De Havilland watch after 45 minutes of preseason.
Yeah, it's really interesting seeing how we set up in the first half with those three midfielders. McAntony said in his interview that we're going to switch formation to more of a 4-3-3. And I think it's evident now exactly what he was talking about. I can understand why the club would want to get another midfielder in based on what you're saying there, Harry. It's you have to have a certain intelligence to be able to play those midfield roles. I think it's probably too soon for Joe Andrews to play that role well going into next season. But Brian Brady is getting a lot of praise from McAntony and Fergie. And yeah, I was quite impressed with him in that first half display as well. Ryan De Havilland, it's a strange one because McAntony didn't really speak about him in his interview. He praised Collins, he praised Keller, he praised Brian Brady, he praised Joe Andrews. Ryan De Havilland didn't really get a mention. And I wonder if Collins is staying next season, I wonder if De Havilland's going to fall out of favour and we'll get a new midfielder in and Brian Brady is actually above him in the pecking order. But yeah, as far as the Premier League goes, it was quite difficult to watch because the players didn't have squad numbers. So sometimes difficult to see who's where. And then obviously watching a live stream is not always the best way of seeing how players are playing. But I really enjoyed hearing the coaches, hearing the shouts. And as far as pre-season friendlies go, I think that's probably about what we expected.
Yeah, I think that it was clear to see that obviously there was a gulf in the quality. And I think that Joe Andrews probably was somebody that did struggle with that. Obviously, it's a massive step up for him. Like, to ultimately have gone from playing for Chippenham Town last season to playing an ex-Premier League side, obviously, it's a huge difference. So there were times where he didn't quite seem as physical as he needed to be, and he looked like he struggled with sort of the pace and the movement of the Leicester players. But like I say, that is sort of his first proper test if we take out the half an hour or 15 minutes that he had at Rotherham. So he's got plenty of learning to do. I'm still confident that he's going to be somebody that will excel. And like Harry mentioned, I think that there's probably more of a chance that we keep Joe Andrews and utilise him more than Ryan De Havilland, because he was just, offering absolutely nothing. I don't want to repeat what Harry says, but for somebody that has watched and understood how Cipriano and how Collins play for the last two seasons and know how Fergie wants to play, it's like he just hasn't taken anything on board and just doesn't know how to implement it. The other person that I probably am a little bit concerned about is CJ. I just don't have any faith in him. He got beaten multiple times. He just looked scatty is probably the word to use for it. Like, he just wants to be here, there and everywhere at the same time. Is going, but then isn't going at the same time. He doesn't fill me with confidence. Yes, he's vice-captain, but I just think that ultimately that he's not the right back that we think he is. Like, if this is somebody that Fergie said was the best right back that EMC's come up against, then that clearly isn't what the guy that we've purchased, because I'm yet to see it and be impressed by Carl Johnston.
But do you agree, Ash? I thought that there were moments that CJ completely locked up their left winger. I know that he did not do it consistently, and I agree that he's scatty going forward, but there is something there defensively. There were a couple of moments, especially towards the end of the first half, where he's going up against Stefan Mavadidi. This is not a League One player. This is someone significantly better than that. Just somewhat easily dispossessing him twice, right, towards the end of the first half. Do you not see that?
Yeah, I think that the issue ultimately with Carl Johnston is that if he's not touch tight to the man, then he's not a very good defender. And like you say, if that he is within sort of a foot of the player, then he's fine. But if he's not, and he's not quick enough to get to close the space out, then it's too late for him, is that he doesn't have the pace. He doesn't have the sort of the physicality. Yes, he's like hustle and bustle, but he's not able to stop somebody running past him. Like, there was times where all it was a simple push past him and then the player had got around him, right? And ultimately, you can't afford to let people run past you, regardless of the level. And then equally, being touch tight on somebody for pretty much 90 minutes of a game, if we look forward, look ahead to the season, that's hard work. So has he got the fitness? I'm sure he does, but I'm just not convinced that he's the right man for the right back position going forwards.
Do you know what's really strange? I'm sitting here, okay, and I'm listening to what you're talking about the game, because whilst I sat here and I watched the game, I couldn't get invested in it. You know, what's highlighted to me is I can't watch Peterborough United on TV. So you guys are analysing and I'm like, did that happen? Did this not? And do you know what? I just think it's just how good you guys are analysing it, because I was watching it, but I wasn't watching it. Does that make sense? It was just bizarre. I was like, okay. I couldn't contemplate that this was Peterborough United I'm watching on TV, because I just never do it. We're always there, which shows that, tells me that I can't do it in future. I need to be at games, because it was just difficult. But just watching bits and pieces, it was what I was trying to take in. I don't think it was anything to worry about from what I saw, and I don't think there's anything to get excited about. It clearly was just a warm-up game, just getting a bit in there. But what I did notice, a couple of what you said about CJ, I don't want to sort of start slating players before we go, but a couple of standout things. There's a couple of good balls from Brian. Brian, did you see Brian? Not Brian, not Donate O'Brien Brady. They call him Brian, which we highlighted. That was what I took from that first half, Brian. So that has made things so much easier. But no, I don't want to waffle on too much, but I struggle to actually get invested in the game with it being on TV. And so I'm going to sort of sit back a little bit more and listen to your analytical side from the second half and what went on. But yeah, bizarre. I don't even know what to say. Strange for me.
Well, I will help you out, Dell, and I will move on to what I thought of the two wingers, Otto and Hayes, which was a complete contrast, because I thought Otto was bottled up. Never do I question Otto's endeavour or attitude. And in fact, we saw in the second half what happens when wingers don't track back properly in Frith, and we'll get onto that in time. But Otto puts in all the requisite effort and just doesn't have the technical ability going up against a championship team, in my opinion. I don't recall him doing anything of note. And then you've got Hayes, who, while still has his faults, that I love that in his interview with the club, he is aware of and wants to work on his passing and his vision away from his dribbling. Goodness me, is his dribbling still absolutely unbelievable. I mean, sending these Leicester players the wrong way three or four times in a single half of football, I think he's looking even sharper than he did at the end of last season. And clearly the injury hasn't hampered him. But did we see him do a line-breaking pass? Did we see him shoot or cross? No, we didn't. And I think he'll come away disappointed that he didn't have that extra string in his bow today. But look, when you can dribble as well as he can, you'd like to think that in time those chances will come up. I think that's it on those two. I think that's it. Hopefully Otto can kick on, because as ever, I'm just not seeing it.
I think you're right in terms of definitely the front three needing to kick on from last season. And realistically now, like you say, Hayes and Otto, they've got big boots to fill, haven't they? And realistically, so has Gustav Lindgren. Now, I think we've seen flashes again today, and I don't want to be disappointed that he was offside, because we've watched players like Ricky J. Jones and Malik Nuddes, he'll be offside many a time. But he's made that run, and that was the bit, and the ball was fantastic that was played through to him. And ultimately, he has got the ball in the back of the net. So if you just get that run timed right, I think that there was glimpses without actually seeing anything. And obviously, he's had that flashing header across the goal that went straight to the goalkeeper. I think that there was a few comments that he should have buried it. I was relatively harsh in that sense. And he's still done well to get ahead of the defender and win the header. So I think that it's difficult for Gustav, because he still looks like he's working with people that don't quite understand the movement that he's going to make and the runs that he's going to make. But hopefully with, what, sort of six or seven preseason games left, he can get those runs in and they can work on it in training and then be ready for the season to start. I think the only other person that I was probably impressed by was George Nevitt. Now, I did go back all the way back to Wimbledon last season when we were in Spain, and I was impressed by Neville again. And I don't want to be that he's such a 45-minute man that I always get impressed by him, but he does look like he was relatively controlled in the defence. I thought obviously he had Mendonca next to him, so he probably felt like he needed to take on a little bit more of the responsibility. And he also had Harley Mills outside of him, so we've got those two left footers. But it does look like George Neville has come on from where he was at the back end of last season, which is promising ultimately, right? Is that he looks like he's got a little bit bigger, maybe still not quite there, but now that we've lost Manny Fernandez, it's very clear that he's going to be potentially playing more minutes unless we bring a replacement in. And ultimately to have kept a clean sheet in the first half was very promising between what was probably not a back four that is going to start the season, right, with Mendonca in there. So I think there's definitely positives to take from it being 0-0 in 45 minutes. And look, the only way is up, I would suppose.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with George Neville as well. I remember saying it last pre-season, but I think last pre-season I was quite impressed with the way he was carrying the ball. Obviously, he'd come in just after Ronnie had left, so we weren't making comparisons to that. But I think today he showed he was very good defensively, which is something that we thought was probably a weakness to his game. Like I said, actually, I had Mendonca next to him. It was actually the first time I'd seen Mendonca play. I was quite impressed with him. You can see there's definitely some talent there. I won't say he's ready just yet to play regular football for us, but it's definitely exciting to see what he can provide for us maybe in the cup games next season. The player I want to talk about is the goalkeeper behind them, Alex Bass. He didn't really have anything to do in the first half, so I can't comment on his goalkeeping. There was no real saves that he made that were impressive. The one thing I did pick up, though, that I was very impressed with was his starting position. When we had the possession at the back, he was very, very high. I think he was almost outside of his box for a lot of it. This is something that Bilo doesn't do and something that Jed would rarely do. I think he would only sort of run out of his box when he could see that we were struggling to get the ball out. But Alex Bass seems to have the confidence to just stay there. And what that provides is, there were so many times last season where we were knocking it around the back and we were waiting. And Collins would sit deep and then he's got nowhere to go, so he plays it back to them again. And then Kipriani comes deep and then eventually we try and get it out. And there's just massive space in between the midfield and the attack because everyone's had to drop deep to keep possession. Having Alex Bass sit so much higher up will naturally push the defence higher up, which will then reduce the gaps between the defence and the midfield and the midfield and the attack. And I think one of the big things from the shouts we heard from the coaching team during the match was how fast they want them to release the ball. And those midfield three need to be on it. As soon as we've got the ball, as soon as we lose the ball, they've got an instruction to do to keep that possession going. And I think just that subtle change of having the goalkeeper play further forward is really going to help with that.
All right. And then we got on to the second half. 10 changes for Posh. I'm just going to read them out. The lineup was Bilakapic, Dornelli, Gajumo, if that is a horrible mispronunciation, then please tell me. Can't even pronounce the word mispronunciation. Rose, Mendonca, or is it Mendonca, according to the Leicester commentator? Collins, Lisby, Keller, Conclark, Frith, Ihombian. It was Collins, Keller and Conclark in the midfield with Lisby, Frith and Ihombian at front three. I will get round, everyone. I was impressed by Chris Conclark in particular, but maybe we'll come back to it. Let's start from, Bass had a good game. Ashley, what did you think about Bilakapic in the second half?
I ultimately think it was clear to see why we needed to improve the goalkeeping department. There was one particular moment with Bilo whereby he's played a pass into Archie Collins and it probably wasn't a pass that needed to be made. And I think that that's where Bilo does struggle, is that somebody shows for the ball and he can see what's ahead of him and he has a full view of the pitch. And he's obviously, Archie Collins may not know that he's got a man directly behind him because he's just not quite putting on that touch type pressure. Bilo still plays in the ball. Then all of a sudden this Leicester player reacts and then Archie Collins has got a massive amount of pressure on him. He spoons the ball back towards Bilo. It ends up going up in the air. Bilo kicks it basically 60 feet up, but it just goes straight up. And then all of a sudden we're scrambling again. And that's the thing, like Lod said, is that that's the difference between a goalkeeper that is comfortable to make the pass and look at what's ahead of them. And obviously Bilo's, D-Mac said this week on Bilo, hasn't he, that Bilo wants to play after, or play for Australia at the World Cup. I don't know what the level of the Australian goalkeepers are, but performances like that, 45 minutes against Leicester, just very sloppy again. Like it's just, he's somebody that reminds, like he's like Manny Fernandez also. He just doesn't seem to be constantly switched on to the game that's in front of him. And being a goalkeeper, you have to have the full view of the pitch and make the right decision. We saw it with Bass earlier on in the game where there wasn't a pass on to a defender or a midfielder, so we just kicked it forwards. Now, it wasn't a perfect kick, but it got us up the field, so there was less pressure on us. I just think that's something that Bilo struggles with. And again, is another one, similar to Ryan de Havilland, that just hasn't learned in sort of 2 years, learned from Jed Steer or learned from the goalkeeping coaches that we've had, and hasn't come on any further. We know that he's a good shot stopper, but that he's still got the same issues with his feet, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was quite surprised to hear that Bilo Kapic was aiming to go to the World Cup with Australia next summer. And I wonder if that's the reason why he's on the transfer list, and perhaps we wanted to keep him as our number two next season, but he wants to be our number one. I was a little bit surprised to see Blackmore not get a half. Bear in mind, we're probably planning for him to be our number two, but I can understand putting Bilo in the shop window. We need to find a club for him, don't we? Did he paint himself in good light? I don't think so. I think we've seen exactly the same Bilo Kapic as last season. Like Batson first half, he didn't really have a lot to do shot-stopping-wise. I don't think any of the goals were his fault, but it was just, like Ashley said, the sloppiness and concentration and decision-making with ball at feet, I think just lets him down again. Regarding the two centre-backs of the second half, I thought Mendonca probably... His first half was a lot better than his second. Obviously, if Hughes didn't have his little injury, he probably would have played one of the halves. So Mendonca wouldn't have played the full 90 anyway. Ollie Rose come in. He didn't fill me with confidence. I think the third goal was his fault. He came out aggressively to try and win the header and he was ultimately nowhere near it. I think if you're going to come out aggressive like that, you need to make sure. Obviously, we've got Sam Hughes, who's absolutely great at doing that. You know, if he's charging forward, he's winning that header. Ollie Rose, the times I've watched him play, he can't do that. So he really needs to tighten that part of his game up before we consider him to be one of our four centre-backs, in my opinion. I think, obviously, Nevitt's painted himself in good light. So we've got three centre-backs I'm comfortable with. But I think today's just proved we desperately need a decent centre-back to challenge Warren for a starting position for next season.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Lod, that you mentioned about Bilo and us wanting him to be our number two. I think that there's a chance that if we get rid of Bilo, that we bring in a goalkeeper on loan. I just personally don't see it with Will Blackmore. We know that he's a nice guy, but that's probably where it ends. We've seen lots of work on the goalkeepers this week, and I think that we're keeping him around for the vibes. I think that Will Blackmore is not good enough to be a number two for me personally. So I think that there's a chance that we either bring in somebody to develop like what we wanted to happen with Bilo, or we bring in somebody on loan to be our number two so that we can open up a relationship with potentially a Premier League team and have some good fruits from them. Like you said about Ollie Rose, I think back to Gillingham last season when he came on, the same thing happened. He went up for a header. He didn't win the header. He gets spun around, and he was clearly quite successful at Scunthorpe. The Scunthorpe fans were all raving about him in the loan that he had, but he's another one who just doesn't seem to be quite there. And the expectations of a centre back that isn't 6'4" at Posh, I think that we're going to struggle with it for quite a long time now, in that they're all basic. We want them all to match Ronnie Edwards, right? We had it with Charlie O'Connell, we've got it with Ollie Rose, and these people are not going to match Ronnie Edwards' style. And then I think about a right back again, James Dornelli. It's really difficult. He was over the far side of the camera, so you didn't see massive amounts of his play because of where he was. But when the crosses were coming in, he just didn't fill me with confidence again with the defensive work that he was going to do, unfortunately.
I agree on Dornelli. Just still needs to work on the positioning and the concentration when the ball is absolutely nowhere near him. Because in a flash with a cross, it can be right in his zone. And he's often stuck on an island, you know, figuratively speaking, with the ball flying over his head. And then he's having to react and run out to it. Or occasion, it just bounces over him. I think he needs to be a little bit wider. And if anything, work on the moment that ball comes in, thinking, am I on the outside of this or the inside of this? You hope he's on the outside of it so that he can run inwards if needed. But at the minute, he goes so central when the ball is out on a wing, out on the right wing, so not his side, and the ball comes in, that it quite often then goes out to the left winger and he's vacated that space and the left winger can do something. Even though I still actually have quite a lot of hope in Donnelly, I think he will be a good player. It's the off-the-ball concentration he needs to work on more than anything. I'll move on to the midfield a little bit. Way more endeavour. I won't go deep diving on Keller or Collins. I just want to bring up Chris Conn-Clark. I wrote an article for Up the Poshcast this week, which if anyone's willing to go read, please do, where I talked about him entering his second season and what he needs to work on. And a few of the points I brought up, I saw plenty of today, and I was very happy to see it. He didn't snatch at passing through balls. He didn't try to have that hero ball moment today. He played smart football consistently. And on one occasion in particular, that meant him running across the middle of the pitch, and he had the chance to maybe make a 10% chance through ball, but instead he recycled it, and it didn't work out in the end, but his pass kept the play going for Posh, which is exactly what we needed in that moment, rather than conceding the ball to their right back, as it would have been. On top of that, he didn't, in the moment that he scored, he blocked a passing lane. He wasn't running around like a bull in a china shop after every player that had the ball. He didn't go charging after their keeper. Instead, he planted himself in a place where the keeper might pass to, and that's exactly what happened. The keeper messes up, passes straight to him, and good job on the finish. Because if that had been underhit slightly, if that had been Randall in that position, the ball would have trickled towards the goal line and would have been stopped by the defender who was coming in. So well done, Chris Conn-Clark. High score from me today.
Yeah, you've glossed over Brandon Kellen there, Harry, and I was really impressed by him. We mentioned before, and I'm sure it was yourself that mentioned that, or maybe it was Lodz, is that he was really comfortable playing the ball with his right, playing the ball with his left. And that was clear to see today. He was making solid passes, whether that be on the ground or just slightly lifting it so that he can carry it forwards. I don't want to blow somebody up, but when we compare it to the first half, I think it's very clear to see that Archie Collins and Brandon Keller are the two centre midfielders that will be starting the season for us. I think that third place is going to be Donny O'Brien Brady. And I think that excites me. Archie Collins was as industrious as ever. He didn't really do anything of note in his 45 minutes on the pitch, but he certainly didn't let the side down in when we conceded three goals. It's interesting to sort of see and the partnerships that Fergie worked on with the game today. And I think that Archie Collins and Brandon Keller being a partnership, fingers crossed he signs a new contract, because, you know, that's an exciting pairing for me.
But since Dara said that we're going to be playing a three, I do wonder if the plan is to have, well, I assume the plan is to have one midfielder to sit back and two to sort of roam around and do what they need to do in the middle of the pitch. When the transfer window first opened at the end of last season, we said about signing a more defensive midfielder. I wonder if the plan was originally for Archie Collins to be one of the roaming players. We don't obviously think of him like that because he's not been able to play that role. But if we're dropping the number 10, I wonder if that's what we'll do. Give Keller some freedom, give Archie some freedom, and then have someone that's going to be the tough tackling midfielder behind them. And what Dara said, and what Fergie said as well, actually, is that our midfield signing depends on Chris Conn-Clark. So I wonder if the midfield three that we played in the second half today is the midfield three we're planning on going into next season, with Archie being the defensive midfielder. Chris Conn-Clark's playing essentially a new role where he has to sit deeper. I 100% agree with Harry. His defensive positioning was so much better than we saw last season. So that's clearly something we've worked on as well. I think if we keep that up, I think that will be our midfield three. I think Dono Brian Brady is probably going to be the next choice, or the midfield that we're potentially going to be signing. And that's sort of why I said that Ryan de Havilland will probably be out of favour if that's our plan going forward. The one thing I would say about Keller in particular, because I was really impressed with him, he's just so confident with the ball. Like, even when he's being pressed, he's happy to let them come right onto him, and then he can get the ball out and get it forward. Something that we've not seen from the midfield from last season. And if I'm honest, I'm quite disappointed that he didn't get to play with Gustav today, because the one thing we say about Gustav is he's making those runs. No one's finding him. Keller could potentially be the one that finds those runs. Obviously, we didn't get an opportunity to see it today because Brad was playing in the second half.
So for me, I'm going to come in here. Obviously, I've been quiet for the whole of the second half because I couldn't get invested. But my highlight was seeing big, bad Brad in the starting lineup for the second half. So good. So good to see him back. Hopefully, you know, we all know that he's got something about him and he's not the finished article or anything like that. But, you know, obviously, Darren was quite critical of him last season, hence why he wasn't playing in, you know, the last few games. But hopefully he's pulled his finger out of his ass, starting to, like, sort of get his head down and, you know, be that player that we know that he can be. Sort his attitude out and, I'm hoping, Brad, you've sorted it out, mate. So good to see him. That was my highlight, if I'm honest, of the game, because I didn't really take much notice of it.
Yeah, do you know, I am with you, Dell, and I did message saying I don't know how people do this week in, week out and watch the game on a stream. And it will be exciting on Tuesday to see the players in the flesh and see what they are all about. And Brad, like you say, he beat the man. He got round the man, the centre-back, multiple times. He just didn't have that final shot, and there was definitely the chance where he was on the side closest to the camera. He just wanted to see him pull the trigger, even if it was from sort of 20, 22, 23 yards away. Just have a pop. We know that he's got that ability. We've seen it at Gillingham that he can strike a ball. Is that if he's beating the man and he's ahead of the defence, just he's not got the pace to continue beating him. And especially, like, we talk about James Justin, the right back at Leicester. He's a good standard player, right? He's going to easily make up the ground. So if Brad were to have had a shot, that would have been nice. I think that then the only other two are probably the wingers. Obviously, Frith, again, difficult to sort of tell over the far side how much of an impact he had, but he did look like he was happy to drop in deeper, take the ball from Dornelli, take the ball from Keller, take the ball from Archie Collins as well. Lisby, I thought he was good attacking wise, but I think he did let himself down for the second goal. He sort of tried to kick their player, and then all of a sudden he was on his arse in the box as their player is putting the ball into the back of the net. So that's maybe a little bit harsh on Lisby. Again, he's another one like Joe Andrew. He's making a massive step up, right? And to play Premier League standard, even if these are academy players, there's still significant sort of levels ahead of where these two are. So I was more impressed with the front three in the second half of the game than the first half of the game, but I think that's maybe because, like we always say time and time again, is that the new wingers were exactly that, weren't they? New, and we don't know what to expect from them. So what they sort of do is exciting because we've not seen it before.
And so sums up the first game of pre-season. They're going to come thick and fast from here. Dizzying pace of teams to play. I think it's Stamford next on Tuesday night. Is that right? Always a good one, away at the Daniels. Next up, really, since we last recorded midweek, our emergency pod on the sale of Motherseal and Manny, the only other piece of news is that we dropped the away kit, a lovely olive green with a navy trim on both the collar and the sleeve. I said that the home kit was as close to a 10 out of 10 as you can get, the only problem being a couple of the names on the underside for the legends not being quite right. For me, I'm happy to give this a high 8. I'm pretty impressed. As you can see, I bought it straight away. Instant purchase again. 2 for 2 from the design team this year. I'm looking forward to the third kit when it inevitably drops as well. Lods, what do you think?
I've not seen it in person, so I feel like I can't comment properly on this, but I'm a big fan of the colour green for anyone that doesn't know me. And therefore, I am a big fan of this kit. it's a strange one commercially. I think it's a very nice looking kit that's probably going to sell quite well. On the pitch, however, and we saw it a little bit today, I think it comes across a bit greyish. It's not like a vibrant green, is it? It's more like an olive or a khaki kind of green. I think if you think back to the famous story about Man United when they had that grey kit against Southampton and they had to change it at half time because they've conceded five goals. And Alex Ferguson at the time blamed the kit colour, saying it blended too much into the surroundings. I think we might have a similar situation here at times. I don't think Darren Ferguson's ever going to come out and say it because obviously he will just get compared to his dad. But I do think that the green will blend into the pitch at times, and I do think it will blend into sort of the crowd around as well.
Okay, so my view on it, most people that know me, I normally criticise the kits left, right and centre because they've got too much in them and this, they're not playing. And like the blue kit, I quite like that, apart from, as we said, the legends or the history players, wrong. But the green kit, I really, really like. I, not as much as I'm going to go and buy one because I like buy kits, but I would give it a strong 9 out of 10. The only criticism I've got of the green kit is the blue bits on the collar and the sleeves. I would have probably gone with a dark green, just kept it all green because I'm not sure about the blue and the green go, but I do really, really like the colour of the green. What is quite fun, I'm actually with Lods because when it first came out, the bit of the football that I did watch on the telly, it did look like, ooh, who's that over the back? Oh, there is a player there. And I do, I think I said in the group chat, didn't we, Lods, about, well, this is going to blend. Then somebody came in and said, well, there's not that many trees when we play around football. But I do get it. I don't think it's going to be as bad as like Michael Boswick when we played at Northampton in that bright yellow kit when he passed it to the steward. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. But I really like it as a kit. I think it's a lovely looking kit. And it's a, I like the colour. I like the green, the shade of green. So it's a thumbs up from me.
Honestly, this analysis of professional footballers wearing a green kit, they're not laying on the grass, are they? The only place where they would struggle with fans wearing it in the background is going to be Plymouth. Oh, and funnily enough, Plymouth playing green. So we're not going to be wearing it there anyway. This is absolutely ludicrous that people are saying, oh, it's going to be a disaster. I think Dell's hit the nail on the head that Boswick struggled with it at that game at Northampton, right? But that was because the steward had a bright yellow top on with black short black trousers, which made him look like a player. Absolutely. You can see it here behind me, how clear it is that they're not the same colour as the grass. And there's a blurred player in the background here who you can make out as well. Just absolutely baffling that this is the level of criticism. We're going to basically blame that we never win a game in the green kit on the fact that the players can't see each other. Generational shocker.
Actually, in that photo behind you, not only is it a super close-up, but in the background, there is no fans anyway. What I'm talking about is those evening games. You know the photos that we get of the fans during the winter, evening games. Everyone's not wearing their home colour. You don't look at a Peterborough United crowd and it's just a sea of blue, do you?
No, they're wearing black.
Yeah, and grey blends into black.
If the players that are wearing green kits can't pick out green from black, then they are not deserving of being professional footballers and they should all start playing down on a Saturday afternoon at Netherton. Because this is just, I just can't believe it. Like, you're saying grey. Well, look at the colour of the wall. It doesn't blend into that. Even the guy that's out of focus is simply...
It does blend a little bit. You've got to remember how fast this game is. Yeah,
you must be, colourblind.
Honestly, I think you're going to find that we're making so many bad passes on these Tuesday night games where we're wearing those kits. I think you're going to be surprised, Ashley. I think it will cause an issue next season.
I also want to jump in on that side of things, not necessarily for the players, but I do think it's going to cause an issue from the fans, you know, because we've got a whole older generation of fans and the eyesight ain't great. It was quite hard to look at the players on the pitch, if I'm honest. When I say old people, it could be young people that are blind as well. You know, I'm blind, I wear glasses and a few of us do, but you know what I mean? I think it is a hard kit to spot out on the pitch from watching it. It's not that vibrant, but I fucking love it. I think it's a great colour kit, but I can see it causing a few issues. Is what it is.
tell you, of course, you were going to find it difficult to spot the players. You've already admitted that you weren't watching a game. So, you know, no wonder you couldn't pick out the players if you weren't even looking at the screen. Jesus Christ. I think it's an absolute banger, and it will go down in history when we survive and we win the third back-to-back-to-back Virtue Trophy. That's what it's going to come down to. A good kit is defined by the success. I do agree that the navy would be better in a different colour, or maybe navy shorts potentially to sort of piece it together. But all in all, crazy, crazy comments on the players not being able to see each other. Let's just let them all wear bibs next week, shall we?
All right. We're there. Let us know in the comments if you feel as passionately as Ashley or Dell or Lods do about this kit. I just think it's quite a good kit. I mean, I have a lot more to say about it. I enjoy the aesthetics. If you are watching on YouTube, you may notice, aside from the fact that I'm modelling the kit, I also have the shiny new Up the Poshcast pin badge, which you can buy from our store on our website, uptheposhcast.com. I would just mention again, as we will with all of these episodes, that there are significant costs with running the podcast, and we want to give you the best experience and product that we possibly can. By buying these pin badges, you're not just buying into the pod, but also the money that we get from this helps us to keep running it at the standard that we do. To all those people who have bought them already, thank you so much. It doesn't go unnoticed. We really appreciate it. And hopefully what we're putting on here with our in-depth analysis of how difficult it is to see the kit on the pitch is the product that you, the listeners, are desperate for and we are delivering on. One more thing. We are also trying to find partnerships, sponsors for episodes. If your business is looking for a place to advertise to highly engaged football fans, we get tens of thousands of impressions every single week. Do drop us a message. Reach out to any of us individually or through our website. We're actively looking for episode by episode partners for this season. We've got a few lined up already, and we can't wait to hear from you. Anything else, guys? Anything else? Go on, Dale.
Yeah, I've got something. Don't forget, Stamford, come and find me, right? Hopefully we have the mics. We can have a little chat. You can get yourself on the show. And then what you could also do is buy your badges, because I'll have them in my pocket. So look forward to seeing you at Stamford, where I can actually watch a proper game of football.
Yeah, thanks, Dale. Yeah, we'll be trialing a little bit of a sort of live blog with Dale at the Stamford game, as he says. Go say hi to him. He's hard to miss. Right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. As always, Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Dell's going to do that thing where he doesn't watch the game again and then moans that he's not watched the game because he spent the whole game talking to people and selling pin badges.